Hello and welcome to the Prism of Value podcast, where we talk about how you can learn to express your value so other people appreciate it, see it, and can act on it the way you'd like them to. And I am very excited today to have as my guest Carrie Hatch. She is a communicator extraordinaire and has been in the advertising and marketing field for more than 30 years. And has owned her own agency and that has just had some big changes, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. She has had an incredible client list that has included everybody from National Geographic to Fannie Mae to the International Spy Museum and many, many other corporate and nonprofit organizations that have really shaped our region and the world. And just a few little bit more. She's been recognized as a Power 100 by the Washington Business Journal for the last 4 years. And she is chairman of the Mid-Atlantic Board of Governors for the American American Association of Advertising Agencies, the 4As. And I've known Carrie through a lot of her nonprofit work. We're both part of Leadership Greater Washington, and also with the Washington Housing Conservancy that is preserving affordable housing for essential workers. So Carrie, welcome. So glad you're here.
Delighted to be here.
So let's begin by talking a little bit about your company. You are managing partner of HeartMDB Plus. So tell us a little bit about that and what you do in your day job.
So I'm hopelessly in love with what I do. So I consider it a privilege to be able to say that because work for me is actually fun. Yes, Liz, I am the managing director of HeartMDB here in Washington, D.C. We are a full-service advertising and marketing communications firm. We elevate the profile and stature of brands, organizations, and entities that matter. Including some of our nonprofit friends that you and I have worked on together. But we have three offices headquartered in Ohio. And again, I am part of the DC office. And as you alluded to recently, I've gone through some changes. I had the opportunity to sell my company after 40 years, hence the name HeartMDB.
So tell us a little bit about that process of you built a company. You run that company, you were the person making all the decisions in that company. And what has that been like? Because I think a lot of people with the pandemic have experienced a variety of different changes in their roles, in their outlook on work and the role that work plays. So I'm just curious what led up to it. And then what has the process been like in bringing your firm into partnership with another?
Yeah, it's been quite a journey for everybody, right? I'm no exception to that rule for sure. I think, you know, learning to do things differently, accepting things as they are, and even having that internal discussion with yourself, that head and heart discussion about, do I really enjoy being 100% distributed? And, you know, how do we recruit and how do we onboard talent and how do we maintain a culture? And how do we still, as an organization, deliver the kinds of advertising programs that mean growth for the brands that we represent? So we'll unpack a little bit of that. I was so fortunate early on. I joined this firm when I was 24 years old as an employee. I'm not even sure if I told you that. So I bought the firm at the age of 30 because at 30, we know everything we need to know about running a company and including things like payroll tax. But, sometimes I often say I have a company to support my habit because I truly do love what I do. Not so much always loving running a business. And I think a lot of your listeners would probably agree with that. But I did find myself in a situation where I could buy the firm. I borrowed $10,000 from my parents and bought the agency in 1987. One of the first things I did is because I was a creative person, which is another kind of strike two, right, about running a business, And one of the first things I did was join the 4A's, the American Association of Advertising Agencies. And to bring that full circle, not only did I learn more about how to run a business better, but, you know, how to recruit, what are the financial metrics you need to know about to run a company, how do you elevate the profile and stature of your own company. And as part of that, one of the folks that I met, and I've met many, many talented agency owners and just advertising professionals in general, I met a gentleman by the name of Mike Hart 20 years ago. And to your question about how did the acquisition occur, we had been pursued by a number of suitors, even before the pandemic. I mean, as much as probably 5 years before. But right before the pandemic, there was a suitor that was keenly interested in acquiring the firm, which was an interesting conversation in and of itself, because I love what I do, it's hard to have objectivity to say, what is the right thing for our people, our clients, and the business, not necessarily what's brilliant for Carrie Hatch. So having to separate those things out was an interesting dialogue. I spoke with a lot of different professionals in the industry about how they were able to make that turn, what that looked like, industry association leaders. But ultimately, the suitor that I was talking to throughout the pandemic did not go forward. And I contacted the 4A's. I said, I wanted you to know that this isn't going to advance. And they said, well, would you be interested in talking to another suitor? And I said, not really. I mean, we'd been through the pandemic. Our dog had died. There was a bunch of things going on. And we had a house fire. I mean, there was a bunch of stuff. But I said, you know, stop, drop, and roll. Yes. Who are you thinking of? And I said, if you're going to tell me it's somebody on the West Coast, I'm probably not interested. But okay, who is this? And they said, well, no, this agency is in Ohio. And I said, it's not Mike Hart, is it? And they said, yes, it is. And I said, oh, my Lord, didn't know he was interested in an acquisition. And, they put us together. And I said, you know, Mike, what the heck? I didn't know you were on. I'd known him for 20 years. I'd seen him twice a year for 20 years at 4A's conferences. I didn't know that you were keen on acquiring. And he said, well, Carrie, I would have asked you, but I knew you had a suitor. And I said, Mike, this is not the prom. This is business. So that's the short version of how we came together. And in lickety split time, we were able to put the deal together because of the trust, because of the familiarity. Our values are the same. He's a man of integrity. And as my husband always said, you're never going to be able to work for anybody. But of all the people on the planet, you know, people you admire and trust and respect are generally the best people to work with in general, but for sure to have someone to acquire your firm. And I thought, how lucky am I? So right. I got very lucky.
Wow. And so how did you... So you made the match, right? And then how did you communicate that and what that would mean to your employees, their employees, as well as the clients you already had, right? Because I know, I remember reading about it, in the paper, in the local business journal. But what was that process like? Because clearly one of the things that it stands out from what you said is the power of building relationships and building trust. And so, then this happened in the midst of the pandemic and as we're not really out of it, but as we're coming out of it. So there was a lot of change that was already going and a lot of, I would imagine, anxiety, and just sort of discomfort with a lot of change. So how did you navigate through that to make sure that you could be successful? And I know you're still going through that process.
Yeah, one of the things, and I was inspired by some of the prior podcasts and some of the initiatives you've led, is understanding your role as a leader And it's self-management. A lot of it is. Mm. It's not just, again, I talked about separating Carrie Hatch from what's best from the firm, because that's hard, right? Because you think of them as two in one. But you need to have some objectivity. So acknowledging my own weaknesses and my own biases and my own sensitivities and the love of this company that I've been part of for 40 years came first and foremost. I actually made myself write some things down. What would be important to the new ownership? What would be important to my team? What would be important to our clients? I mean, literally taking on that persona. And in some cases, to your earlier remark, it is about stability and consistency and assurances. You know, what does this mean? How do I fit in? Primarily from the team standpoint, it was very important to me personally, and you and I have known each other a long time. The integrity factor was a big deal for me. Not just for me to understand it, but for my team to be exposed to that, hear directly from Mike Hart, from his management team, you know, have visits, you know, coming down to the agency here from headquarters and things like that. I mean, there were welcome gifts and what have you, but everything, I'm not saying it's perfect, by the way, it's hard, but we tried to anticipate how each individual would feel. Same thing for clients. Well, we like what we're doing now. Why are you changing it? Kind of thing. What's wrong with what we're doing? There's nothing wrong with what we're doing. This brings us more technology, more firepower, more talent, more redundancy. We've added on a PR practice to this as well. We're nearly 90 people now in three offices, so it's different. It's right. Different. But that firepower is a benefit in a competitive world. And if there's one thing, I mean, you and I have gone through a lot of change, but here's what I think is the big difference. It's the velocity of change, and going through COVID has made us all recognize, in order to remain competitive, and in my clients' cases, brand leaders, we have to do what is necessary to remain ahead, because it's dog eat dog. It's, you know, and bringing all that came with that acquisition, that merger of those two cultures, those disciplines. A lot of the category experience was the same, so that's a good fit. You know, being fiscally conservative, that's a good fit. Having a high moral benchmark in terms of HR. And I mean, honestly, my team is doing even better in some regards for compensation and the whole package when it comes to 401k contributions and things like that. We had that as well, but I would say it's a plus up. Mm-hmm. But making sure that we had planned ahead to understand the best we could. I mean, right. it came together quickly. It was not perfect, but we tried our best to anticipate that. Introducing the combined team to our clients, you'll get a kick out of this. This just happened this week, and I think I can talk about it because it was publicly divulged. MDB had put in a submission for a large transportation piece of business, a 5-year contract. The day of our announcement of the actual acquisition, we were shortlisted to pitch that business. Yesterday, we were notified that we won it. So now MDB and Hart came together to do that pitch and to win it and bring it across the, you know, into the end zone was a big deal. But was it pressure testing the relationship? You betcha.
Yeah. Yeah. So that whole notion of what we talk about a lot here is seeing things through a prism of value. In other words, how is this going to enhance the various people you're talking to, and what pain are you going to take away, or frustration, or barrier? And so by applying that It sounds like you did that throughout the process. And to be able to frame the merger and the coming together and in the terms of how it would benefit or various audiences and what frustrations it might take away and what capabilities it would add. And I would imagine, you know, our industries, like everybody else, have seen such a shift in how we communicate. And there's new platforms and new technologies constantly coming into play. And staying abreast of that is a full-time job just in and of itself, right? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, regardless of the acquisition, you know, I always say that I think each of us deserves one of those little trophies because we have now become official tech guys. Everyone knows 8 different platforms because you have to be fluent in order just to participate and to succeed. I mean, there's nothing quite like being tested in a pitch online where you have 8 different people that have speaking parts, by the way. So, I mean, staying on top of that. But here's what I will say to that, Liz. One of the things that I felt was important, it was important to me, and I believed it was important to our team and our clients, personal notes. People who would take a meeting with me in person, I did go on site throughout COVID for those who were open to that. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But so being flexible and accommodating to that. And also, you know me, I have a bias towards people. That's where I get my superpower and my energy from. And so anything I could do to remain in touch, even sending funny stuff. Like everybody saw those socks that says, if you're seeing this, bring me a glass of wine kind of thing. I mean, I was sending out crazy stuff. I was sending out miniatures of Tito's to my team. I mean, we were doing all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, people were doing, obviously, you know, trivia nights and what have you, but we were doing it with clients as well. And anything to keep that personal touch going and for me to keep my sanity going. I've always said, and I probably have shared with you, I need 3 things to be happy: a place to go, people to work with, and something to contribute to. Mm-hmm. And when you think about when COVID hit, a place to go, I didn't have anything. I was back in my home. People to work with took on kind of a different flavor, right? So you only get a 0.5 out of 1 on that. And something to contribute to, we still felt mission-oriented to help our clients. But that's only 1.5 out of 3 things. So I have shared that, you know, being optimistic during COVID and this big shift has been a full-time job. Yeah. Being positive with yourself and exercising, doing all the right things, being positive for your team because being authentic is key. But if you're not positive, you really can't expect them to be.
Right.
And that comes across to your clients. So looking at the glass as being half full was quite an exercise, but I think a necessary one.
What do you think, and you've touched on a lot of things, but what do you think, you know, if people who are listening to this, what's a piece of advice? As we now we're learning to live with the pandemic. I don't want to say we're coming out of it because it's going to be with us for a long time. We're just in a different place with it. But what piece of advice would you give to people as they're thinking through their next steps and running their organizations, thinking about how they grow? What are some things that you would encourage people to, how might they think about these things, or what kind of advice, you know, that you've learned from, well, 40 years, but also this most recent experience too?
Yeah, it's, I'll tell you, it's humbling. But humility is key to success. I also think you have to have, I mentioned objectivity. I think you need to kiss change on the lips because you cannot stay in one place, at least in my business, and be competitive. Mm-hmm. You constantly have to be evolving. You have that responsibility for your people, your clients, and honestly for yourself. You know, and we need to gate ourselves, gate your chapters of your life. And I'll put it this way. Nobody wants to be that person who stays too long in one place. I would say kissing change on the lips and planning your next step allows you a bit of control. It is uncomfortable. It is humbling. I mean, I actually report to somebody now, Liz. Imagine what that's like. You know, yeah. I'm doing a timesheet. Okay.
Wow.
That's a thing. But being part of a larger organization that can bring such firepower to our clients, and honestly, a professional path for my colleagues gives me great pleasure.
Yeah. So and I think that's an important thing as a leader is taking yourself out of it in the sense of it's not about you, but about the bigger thing. And that is so hard for so many people to be able to do and to be able to do that. I also love kissing change on the lips because that is such a great way of describing what we all have to do. But this idea of, because I know I see it in many times when we're talking to people and they're talking to clients and there's disagreement and we have to step back and say, what's good for this project? What does the project need? I know you want this, but is that what the project needs? And it's hard to do that because if you care about what you do, you're personally involved in it and maintaining that proper perspective, I think is a hard thing. How do you do that?
You have to want to do it.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's about the responsibility of stewardship is more important to me. I mean, I would, and I still am doing what I love, and I could have left everything the same. I didn't have to change. I mean, we had some, you know, ups and downs, right. But it meant reinvesting in the agency, reinvesting in people. Am I the best person to do that at this point, or is there somebody better to do that than me? Mm-hmm. And recognizing, I mean, that's an option, but recognizing the opportunity that came my way when it came and saying to yourself, yes, it's easier and more familiar and perhaps more comfortable to hang on to where you're at, but is it, to your point, the right thing for our people, our clients, and ultimately me. Mm-hmm. But that was the order. It was mm-hmm. our people, our clients, and then me. And I had this piece of paper in front of me. I'm a visual person. I'm a former art director. So I needed to have the words of what's important. And I put it in front of me. And as I was going through this process throughout, you know, being, with different suitors and what have you, recognizing that this opportunity at this moment with this suitor, with the relationship we had, the timing, COVID was still lingering on, and what is best for all of us, but in that order, I knew in my heart was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. That's great. What do you see as the challenges for the future and the opportunities?
Generally, I'm an optimist, so you're going to hear a bunch of upsides. I'll tell you what's happening in the industry that's challenging. is the KPIs, the ROI, you know, that constant, what have you done for me? The question becomes, if you're investing in advancing your brand, your product, your service, your organization, what are you investing? How are you investing it? Who are you speaking to? How are you connecting with them or not? And what is a reasonable expectation and outcome? One of the things that I find challenging is, okay, we've been in the market 12 hours. Why aren't we doing X? Think about, it's like dating. Think about it this way. You've just met somebody. Is there a proposal yet? No, probably not. You know, so we have to be smart. We have to be investment-minded for sure. But we have to be wise about managing expectations and outcomes. We all want to be respectful of the investment and what those outcomes should be. But it takes time to nurture a relationship. It depends on what you're promoting, what action you're looking for. But sometimes that sales cycle is 18 months to 2 years. Sometimes it's 8 weeks. Sometimes it's 8 minutes. But we need to know our category. We need to know how we're investing, what we're investing. Do it wisely. And we're in a time here, Liz, that people are, it's instant gratification. What have you accomplished today? As opposed to, are we moving towards an outcome which is favorable? So, and not to mention the competitive environment we're now in for most brands and products and services. So
your role too is the communicating why this isn't a commodity, and that what you said about investment, right? Because I think there's a commoditization. We see it in, you know, in the PR world too, where people are, well, we can write a press release for $15, you know. Okay, great. You know, what are you going to do with it? But I think there is this, like you said, this instant gratification and this commoditization. And what you're really bringing is something much more than the campaign. But it's, you know, it's all the things that go into it and seeing it as part of growing a business, not just a task that we're undertaking marketing now or advertising, but really seeing that in a bigger way. And that's a communications challenge that all of us in whatever aspect of marketing, communications, PR, et cetera, have to deal with. Would you agree with that, Carrie?
I would, but you know what gives me great heart and great optimism? Have you noticed the number of CEOs lately that have been coming from the marketing suite?
Mm.
And I find that fascinating. As of late, I've noticed that understanding the role of marketing communications, taking advantage of the technology that we have. I do believe that you know, all things are not created equal. You definitely want an agency, you know, whether PR, advertising, marketing, communications partner that's invested in your business, not just in what they're doing for you. So, well, and you know this to be true. You know, many times historically, if a prospective client would come to us and it wasn't quite a right fit, but I know, like you would know from being in the market for 30 years or so, who the right person is, I will refer them to that person because they want somebody or they should have somebody who's invested in their business, understands the territory, in some cases a subject matter expert. And I've even said that. I said, look, this is a great opportunity. It's not for us, but let me tell you who you should be talking to.
Right.
Because it is a business discipline. It really is. I mean, we are economic drivers. That is our role, period. We happen to practice marketing communications as an asset and a way to advance that, but it's a business solution to a specific end.
Right. Just like I always say, communication's not a soft skill, it's a hard skill because it's really, really important. Well, this has been delightful. I could go on and talk to you for hours about all of this. Really appreciate your being a guest on Prism of Value. And any parting words, any last words of advice or thoughts of, that you want to share?
One of the things we had talked about earlier was advice for perhaps people getting into the business.
Hmm.
And I'll pick up on a theme I mentioned earlier. And what we look for is that eagerness, that initiative, and that humility, I think, are key. But I'll wrap it up by saying this. Give yourself permission to start at the beginning. It's not starting at the bottom. It's starting at the beginning. Many times in my career, and perhaps yours, we've interviewed people who say, well, I want to be, you know, an account executive, or I want to be a director of research or media or whatever, but they haven't had the opportunity or the runway to build that skill set. My advice would be give yourself permission to start at the beginning, because all those experiences, every opportunity builds on each other, and you will get there, but start at the beginning.
Mm. And you have an exciting new beginning as well, and I wish you great success in that, and keep kissing change on lips, because I love that.
We all are. We all yeah. are. You know what? It's not optional.
No, it's not. Thank you again.